Hello, sir. Can you tell me your full name?
Alfred Edwin Johnson.
Alfred Edwin Johnson.
Yes.
Okay. And when were you born?
3rd of March, 1915.
Okay. Now, you were not born in Union County.
No, I was born in Emmett, Idaho.
Okay. But you did have family who was living there.
In this area.
Okay. Can you tell me about that?
Well, my father came to this town in 1906. His family shipped cattle from Utah and wintered them up at Tallahassee. And my dad stayed with here in town with his mother. And the next spring, they took the cattle. They had bought a ranch down in Idaho, and they drove the cattle all the way back to Idaho the next summer. After they had wintered them up at Tallahassee. I can't see how they wintered them up there, but they have some of the winters like they do now. They would start to death, but they hit a good winter, I guess. Grandfather stayed up with the cattle, and my father and his brother and sister lived with the mother down here in town.
What was your grandfather's name?
Jonas Johnson. And he came from Sweden when he was about 12 years old with another family, and lived in around Heber City in Utah. But he worked for 25 cents a day. But he had his board and room with that, you know, just 12, 14 year old kid.
Now, when your dad was living in this area, he was living with your grandmother?
Yes.
And what was her name?
Ida Victoria. Her maiden name was Smith.
Smith.
Yeah.
Do you know if her family was from the area?
No, they weren't from the area. At that time, there was a lot of Mormons coming out of Utah and with the sugar beets and cattle and buying land in this valley. But they didn't find any land here that would accommodate the cattle they had, so they went back to Emmett, Idaho, and bought a piece of ground down there. That's how they didn't stop here. I would have been a native then.
Did your dad ever tell you stories about what it was like to live in this valley?
No, he didn't. He didn't tell me much about it. He remembered the trip going back out, how hard it was to herd the cattle down Burnt River Canyon. You know, have you seen that road up on the side of the hill down? That was the road down Burnt River Canyon. Imagine herding a bunch of cattle down that road and meeting the traffic.
I bet that was difficult.
Yeah, they had wagons, mostly in those days.
What was your first experience in Union County?
I come into Union on a bus. My cousin was over there, and when I got off the bus, I says, "What direction is that?" And the guy says, that's east. And it was north, and I've been turned around ever since. But anyway, I had a cousin in Union working at the Hess Mill over there, and I was headed for Wake Island looking for work. And was asked the depression was beginning to settle down. They were building a big airfield out on Wake Island. I was going out there to work for Morse Knutson. But I got to Union, and my cousin says, "Where are you going?" I said, "Out to Wake Island, go to work." He said, "What are you doing? You got a job?" And I said, "Not yet, but I'm going out there. Get one when I get to Portland." He said, "Why go to Portland?" That kid sitting over at that saw is going away to school in 2 or 3 weeks, and you can get his job. I said, "Well, a job's a job as far as I'm concerned," so that's what stopped me. That fellow was Dave Baum. You know him?
Mm-mm.
Heard of him. One time he was going away to college, and I took his job in the sawmill.
What were you doing in the sawmill?
Well, I was running a swing and trim saw there. But I worked up to a grader in less than 2 years. And I was grading lumber in the sawmill when I got married and when I was drafted into the Army.
Now, what was the saw that you...
Oh, the swing and trim saw on it.
Now, what did that do?
I cut the knots and the rough parts off of the board and sent them back out on the chain to be put in their right place down the chain. But
what was it like doing that sort of work?
Oh, it was a good job. You know, my father was told us boys, he says, don't go running around all over everywhere looking for a job you like. He says, find a job. The harder you work at it, the better you'll like it. And I found that to be a fact all my life. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of jobs, but the harder I worked at them, the more I learned, the easier they were, the better I liked them.
Were they running only one shift in the mill?
Yes, they were running just one shift.
What would your day be like in the sawmill?
In the sawmill? Well, usually...
Start early?
Yeah, I started about 7, I think, and got off at 5. Mm-hmm. An hour off for lunch. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, while I was in that swinging trim saw, that they called it the doghouse because you couldn't get out of it. But there was a lot of work in there for me to do. It kept me busy, and that's what counts.
What year was that?
In 1939. 1939? Yeah.
What did you think about the valley?
Well, I liked it. I liked the mountains and timber. I'd worked in falling timber in Idaho as a young man. Been in the mountains a lot on construction work. I like the mountains. Mm-hmm. I'm like my son up here. I haven't found a better place.
What sorts of things did you do after work for fun?
For fun? Mm-hmm. Dance.
Dance?
Yeah, I worked in a dance hall all the way through high school. And I played in an old time orchestra. And lots of times I'd be out 3 nights a week going to high school working. Mm-hmm. But most, you know, nowadays kids don't think anything about having to work their way through high school. But I was batching, living in a little one-room house. My folks got it for me, didn't cost anything, an old friend's house. And Dad would bring me wood and Mother would bake me bread and bring it over every week when they come to town. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got through high school going. I worked at my mother's cousin owned a dance hall. That's how I got the job, checking hats to start in with. And then I took some dancing in the Mormon church and was a good dancer. And the fellow that run the dance hall, he had me be a starter. You know, in the dance hall, you get a nice big 10-piece orchestra playing and nobody dancing. You don't want that. So he'd say, give me the nod, get out there and get a girl. So I'd go out and pick up a girl, good dancing, away we go. I wouldn't get around halfway around the hall until everybody else was on the floor. Hmm. We had a hall full of people.
And that was called the starter.
Yeah, sure, get them up, get them going. Uh-huh.
So yeah. When you were here in Union County, what were the hot spots?
What was the name of that hall? Zuber Hall was the dance hall.
Zuber Hall?
Yeah, and then there's another hall upstairs across the street from my shop is now. That second floor was all a dance hall in the old Sacagawea Hotel.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about Zuber Hall?
Oh, Zuber Hall was the place to be on Saturday night. They were like the hall that I worked in Emmett. They usually had some big bands come in, mm-hmm. 10-piece like that. Just once in a while, mostly they had a steady, good, popular dancing. And the crowd did it before every Saturday night of young people.
What did it look like?
Well, what did it look like on the outside?
On the inside.
Oh, it wasn't. I don't remember much about it. I was too interested in the girls in the orchestra. I liked to dance.
Was it formal? Fancy?
Well, no. Jitterbug days were in those. Just starting. I don't know, jitterbugging had been going on for quite a while because I'd been cutting a rug in Southern Idaho. But there wasn't too much of that going on here. Not anything swinging between your legs and that sort of thing. They didn't do
that. They didn't do that.
Not this town. So I didn't show them how.
What kind of dancing did they do?
Well, it was two-step, foxtrot, waltzes, waltzes. Well, we called it two-step, and not a two-step, we called it single shuffle. One step on one foot and then two on the other, and that was single shuffle. Mm-hmm. And there was a number of ways of dancing it too. And all you had to do was listen to music and turn your feet loose as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of fun with that.
So what kind of music did they play?
Oh, good dance music. Mm-hmm. Like you don't find any good dance music now. It's all, I call it jungle stomp now. you can't tap your foot to it, so how can you dance to it?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't dance. My wife can't dance anymore. So last time I went to a dance, when my wife wasn't there, and my son got real angry at me because I was out there with all the women of my age, you know, really cutting the rug, and
Uh-oh.
Having a lot of fun. Boy, he told me off. Mother at home and you out here having a good time. I didn't go to any more dances.
So you went to the Zuber Club.
It was a dance hall.
It was a dance hall.
Yeah.
And where else did you dance during those days?
Well, that time I was living with a cousin. Well, before that, there used to be a dance hall in Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called a Covered Wagon. And they had a 10-piece band usually every Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go every Friday to get our gates and go over there and dance. And it was bigger than Zuber Hall, but it had a lot better facilities, sound and like that. And then there's another one down in Ontario. I can't think of what the name of that one was. It was bigger than Boise.
Now you said you also danced at the Sacagawea Hotel?
Once, usually New Year's Eve and like that, there's a dance up there. But then on New Year's and holidays, the church always had to dance to the young people at the church.
What church was that?
Mormon Church up where the paper office is now.
The Observer? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a big building there, a big tabernacle on a recreation hall behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big dance hall.
Was the dancing the same? Whether
oh,
you
yeah.
were at the church or
sure.
at the club
sure.
or at the hall, it was the same.
Yeah, they were all ballroom dancing mostly.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we used to have the Golden Green Ball there come on once a year. That was one of the main events of the city. Because
mm-hmm.
they had a big balcony all around the top of the basketball floor, and that would be full of people just watching the dancers. And the kids in the church would put on a floor show. We danced. Formal dancing, and every one of us would do the same thing at the same time. The floor would just go like this. With kids dancing, it would be quite nice.
Was there a dress code?
Oh yeah, there was. I don't know, there was none. Just good dresses, you know. And of
mm-hmm.
course, well, we always had white shirts, and usually most people wore white shirts to dance.
Mm-hmm.
Slacks
and a tie or not so formal?
Yeah. Sometimes Zuber Hall wasn't too formal. You could go there without a tie.
Mm-hmm.
But at the church where we were in the church, and so we always danced formal.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I was in one of those contest shows before we were married.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fun.
So let's see. After you worked at Hess's Mill, you were actually gone for a while during the war.
Oh, yes. I was there till 40, 41, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall any sort of a farewell party for the people who left for the war here in La Grande?
No. I never heard of anything before I left or when they got back.
Okay.
I was quite disappointed because I got back about 4 months, 5 months after the war ended. So I was in occupation troops in Germany for a while, and they couldn't get us out of Germany that fast, you know. Couldn't get boats enough to haul us home. And when I got here, there was never a parade or nothing to recognize the GIs coming back. I don't know whether there was right after the war or not. I don't know. I never heard of it.
When were you married?
Married before I went in the Army. On December the 24th, Christmas Eve. I never can forget that. I have to have two presents. anniversary and Christmas.
What year was that?
1941. Virginia!
That's what I have, 1941. You mentioned that before.
Yeah.
And how did you meet your wife?
Well, I went in for a cup of coffee and a cigarette at a named Shank's Cafe in Union with my cousin. He didn't smoke, but I did. And two little blondes came up and waited on us, and that was it. he introduced me to her, and about, well, I think, 2 or 3 days later, him and I was across the street, and he was, his girlfriend and him were getting ready to go to a dance. And you're going to dance with us tonight, Al? And I said, no, I don't have a date. I don't think I'll. Well, there goes Virginia Anderson, go catch her. I almost had to run 2 blocks to catch her the way she walked. She really took off. Mm-hmm. She was going home after work. But they started going. I hadn't went with anybody since.
So Virginia Anderson?
Yeah.
And was she from the area?
Yeah, she was from Union.
Okay.
Yeah, she was born in Union.
And had her parents been from the area as well?
Anderson Shoe Shop, been in business since 1921.
Okay.
Over in Union, and then they moved to stop here in 97, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
And so you were married in 1941. Did you have any children?
No.
No?
No children. No, we didn't. Our children came along until about almost 2 years after I got home. I would come back and went to work for Hess, and they wanted me to work up again. They didn't give me my old job back. I was supposed to went back grading lumber, but they didn't. They just gave me a common labor job. And I stayed there about 3 months and seen it wasn't going to go anywhere, so I quit and went to a feed store over there where a fellow said I'd get a raise every 6 months until I was making the same as the other sackers. So that was in the feed store where you made feed for cattle and ground grain and that. And I did quite a bit of that when I was a kid. So I could sew sacks. And I was there for about, I don't know, 6, 8, yeah, about a year, and I never got a raise. And then when I went, that was after I came back from the Army, and when I seen it there wasn't, I hit the boss about it, and he said, well, the committee that runs is a co-op. They decided not to make the automatic raises until they all get one wage, so I decided I was going to do something else. And then I always liked to tinker with watches and clocks when I was a kid, and I saw an ad in a popular mechanic or somewhere, an American School of Watchmaking in Los Angeles, G.I. Bill. So I talked to her with my wife, and she said, yeah, she had an aunt, two aunts and an uncle living down there, and we could live with them and go to school, she said. She wrote down or called them or something. Anyway, we decided to go to in Glendale, California, but they lived over in West Los Angeles, and we had an old, I bought an old Studebaker car, we drove that down, and went to school there for 2 years, almost 2 years.
When did you come back?
I don't remember exactly the date we came back. I think it was in 1990. Can't remember what day it was. 49, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Around 1949.
And what did you do when you got back?
Oh, I worked with a kid here in town for a while. He had a small jewelry store up there and a gift shop, and it's across the street from where the old First National Bank was. And then I decided I'd start a store up in Union. So we went over there and I started a little store. I'll just set my bench in, and I bought some watches and some jewelry and had a showcase. We stayed there that winter. And next spring, our boy was born, our first boy. And that was the hardest winter it ever went through in this roundabout. I mean, the snow was about almost 3 feet deep on the level. And it was 10, 15 below for 10 days straight, and the wind blew every day. Mm-hmm. It was mean. In fact, the highways were plugged on both sides of the valley. You couldn't get out of the valley nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Above Union there, a snowplow went up there and got stuck, and before they'd get it out, was drifted out over the top of it, and they went and got the big rotary, brought it up, was going to dig it out, and it got stuck, and it covered it up too. And they just couldn't do a thing. These big consolidated trucks were in the valley, and over there, they hauled all the gasoline in tankers then, and those tankers were in Union, lined up two at every corner, waiting to go on the highway and go on down the road. But the hotel in Union was plumb full, and people took them in their houses and everything else.
Mm.
Quite a winter.
What was the name of your store in Union?
Just, just Al's watch repair, but I didn't stay there. The next year I came over here and went to work at a jewelry store here.
Which one?
And where Lawrence's is now, but Donnelly's jewelry store. They were from Pendleton. Mm-hmm. They had a big, they had a store like Lawrence's in there, and they had two watchmakers. And one of them quit. The other one was an apprentice. And so Jack Robinson was a manager, and he came over to Union and talked to me again. I was here. He said, give me $100 a month. I said, okay. So my wife and I moved here to town and bought us a house up on 8th Street, I think it was. Down on 8th Street, that dining bowl, the college, we bought us a house there. And started making payments. I got on a GI Bill, pretty good deal. $40 a month and only 4% interest, and that's not bad.
Not at all.
And I was making $75 and $100 a week at Donnelly's. And that went real good. We just got saved a little money and got furniture bought and started to settle down to work. And come the middle of the summer, why Donnelly's jewelry store decided to sell out. And so they sold the store right off my name. And I didn't want to go back to Union start up again. So a friend of mine I was working with in the church, he was a railroad water gang man. You know, they run steam engines through here then. And he was over all the water works from back the other side of Idaho, come to Seattle. And he lived here in town. And so he put me on the water gang uptown. I was making more money than I was fixing washing, so I worked there about until the next spring. And the manager of that store, Jack Robinson, he went down to the Willamette Valley. And he went into the oldest store in the state of Oregon, Friendship Jewelry Store down there. And as soon as he went in there, he called me up because he didn't have a watchmaker. And so he said, "Al, I need a watchmaker. I need him right now. How soon can you get down here?" And I said, "Well, I'd have to quit the saw and quit the railroad and move." And he said, "Well, I've got a job here. I'll pay you $100 a week. I've got a house for you. My boss owns a house. It's only $50 a month. And how soon can you get here?" And I talked to her, Virginia, and she said, "Well, I might as well go. The railroad was no place for a teacher, and I was a skilled watchmaker, so I should stay with my trade." So I went out to Woodruff's ranch out here, and I'd worked for them right after the war for a little while until I went back to work, you know. Anyway, they were taking a load of, they were going down to get a load of war surplus in Portland with a in a big truck. They had a big truck with a huge thing. And so we put all our stuff in the back of that, and we drove down to, I drove it down to Albany and unloaded my stuff and come back to Portland. Well, they went down with me, Brad Cooper did, and brought the truck back. And then they loaded it up and come back to the ranch with it. I moved down there 5 years at Venture Jewelry Store. And my eyes went bad on me. I woke up one morning and I've seen two of everything. I told my wife, I said, the crazy world we live in, everything's two. I said, I want to go back to LeGrand. She said, why? And I said, I'm not going to let my eyes go for any job. I said, I'll go back there and do something. She said, okay. Well, we'd saved up a couple $1,000 and had enough. That was nigger rich. So we thought we were pretty solid. So we had another car and two little boys at that time. One boy, Paul, was born down there. And we came back and bought this place. We've been here ever since.
So what place was that you bought when you came back?
This one.
Oh, you bought this house?
Yeah, this house. Mm-hmm. 2 acres.
And what's the address of the house?
This is 611 18th now.
611 18th.
Yeah, it was 618 Highway Avenue then.
Okay.
And it stopped right down here. There were three houses then.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't open street. It was a dead-end street.
And what did you do for work when you came back?
Let's see. Oh, my eyes were bad, so I went to looking for a store to buy, a small business, one man that I could handle and not have to work. Well, see, I was running, from 3 to 5 railroad watches across my bench every day. And that's a lot of fine work. And I run 1,500 watches a year across my bench for 5 years, and they were all railroad watches. My apprentice did the other watches, and I helped him with them and like that, and taught him how to fix watches. But my job was the responsibility with 3 railroad lines down there. And so I got plenty of experience fixing railroad watches. And when I come back up here, I was looking for a place to buy. We went all over, kind of down to, we kind of like southern Idaho and Boise area. We went down, looked around Meridian and Nampa and Caldwell. Couldn't, Leesian, Ontario, all the small towns down there. Couldn't find anything that we thought we wanted to jump into and go and bet for. But they were wanting too much money for them, so it doesn't matter. They wanted me to buy their business plus their inventory. You can't do that and buy a business. You can just buy the inventory and take it from there, because you got to make your own business. But anyway, when I came through here, Mr. Anderson, her father, said, well, Al, you've helped me here in the shop quite a bit. He says, if you don't find anything, he says, I'll sell you half of this for $10,000. And I says, okay, if I don't find anything, I got something to go for. And anyway, I went on, as before, I quit down there, and we went on down there and back, and I decided I'd come buy in with him. And I went back and worked about 2 weeks in Virginia, had the boys here at her folks' place, and she found this place, and she thought it would be a good place for kids. And it's off a main drag, and, you know, and this was outside the city limits then. And you could do anything. You could have a cow, and you could have a horse. So we figured this would be a good place to raise boys. So we bought it, and made a down payment on it, rather. And then I come up to Woodruff's, again, out the ranch, and I says, when are you going to take a load to Portland? He says, we're leaving tomorrow out with a load of hogs. And he says, why? I says, well, I want to haul my stuff back from down at Albany. Hey, drive that big truck you drive that truck and Bill will drive the other one. He says, when we get them unloaded, we'll wash the truck out and you can go down to Albany. I had a trailer I borrowed down there, and so they built a frame above the pigs and put the lifted the trailer up on top of that. And I hauled that big truck was an old army truck, and they had lengthened it out about 4 feet, and they'd put a big, huge engine in it, and boy, it just cruises 70 with a load on it. And we hauled them hogs down there and dumped them, and I went on down to Albany all alone. But we was living upstairs over the shop then, because the boss in the meantime had got a chance to sell that house, and we got rent free down at the over the top of the there was a five room apartment above the store.
Mm-hmm.
It was all heated, no expense to me at all, it was free as far as I was concerned, so it was good to be able to save some money that way. That's when we bought it's not that now, it used to be a piano over there. We bought a piano and a washing machine and stoves and everything else that you buy and your kids start coming along. Anyway, I loaded that truck up, and it was 20 feet long, and it was just heaping. Well,
so you moved back here, and then decided to go to work with your father-in-law?
Yeah, I bought half interest in the shoe shop.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember how much I paid him down. I think $1,000. And there wasn't enough work to keep the both of us busy. So I went up to Lawrence Security. Harold Lawrence had just moved into that store where they are now. And well, he'd been there a couple of years. And he wanted to get out of the office, quit. Get out. He wanted to get out and hit the road. He wanted to get home sick. So he wanted to know if I'd go up there and handle the railroad watches for him. And all the pocket watches and his wife, she said she'd fix the little watches. I said, okay, so I went up. I'd go up there at sometime at 6 o'clock in the morning and work till noon, and then I'd go down to Anderson's shoe shop and work until the work was all done, sometime be 10, 11 o'clock at night. But I got the place paid for. I earned the money at Lawrence's to pay for Anderson, pay for the shop.
Now tell me about railroad watches.
A railroad watch?
Yes.
Is, I can show you one. a railroad watch is a 21 jewel watch. And they'll run within 3 minutes a month. You wind them regularly. I've had some railroad watches that were never set year in and year out. They've run perfect year round. In fact, I have several of them down there in Albany. They'd come in every Monday morning and check it again, the regulator, and they're always right on.
So you had the regulator in your shop here?
Yeah,
and
in Albany.
So what's the significance of having the regulator?
Well,
why was that so important on the railroad?
Well, they run the railroad by watching them and not by electrical switches. And if you hit the switch at the wrong time, you have to be another train sitting there. So they had to be accurate. You couldn't have a 17 jewel watch, no way. You had to have a 21 jewel watch, and it had to be rated within 3 minutes a month. And if it got over 3 minutes a month, you had to take it in and have it fixed. And that was my job, to make them run within that tolerance of 3 minutes a month. And I had a lot of them around there, really good. Because you see this, the sixth position a watch can get in the daytime, and you have to regulate them in each position. And that's, you gotta know what you're doing. Yeah, I really enjoyed the challenge of fixing it. But now I got one eye, it's not so good, so it's not so much fun anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the railroad watch was a pocket watch. It had to be 16 size. Or 18 size, but they had to be 21 jewel.
Did each person who was working on the railroad have one?
Everybody who was on the railroad had a railroad watch.
So So how many watches in, when you were in LeGrand, how many watches were you in charge of?
Well, I didn't ever keep track of it. See, I was working for Lawrence's Jewelry, and that went through their books and that. But I never had to do over one a day here. A lot of times I didn't do them. Then I'd work on wristwatches to help Raymond like that on her watches. But no, there wasn't near as many railroads. See, we had three railroad lines going through Albany, and we had to take care of them from both ends. And when you get a reputation like the French jewelry had, see, you had to be good and work like that.
Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, you were also working at Anderson's.
Anderson's shoe shop.
What kind of work did you do there?
Shoe shop, picking shoes.
Can you tell me about that work?
Work, just work. That's a lot harder than fixing watches, I'll tell you that.
It's harder than fixing watches?
Oh, yeah, because it's manual. You know, you're manual. You're tearing the soles off the shoes and hand stitching them and sewing the welts on by hand. And there's a lot to it, really being fixing shoes. But nowadays they don't fix them, so they just throw them away.
What kind of equipment did you have?
Oh, we have still the same equipment up there now. It's we had two big stitchers, because there's two of us working. So we had two big shoe machines, and two of us could sew on soles at the same time. We had a lot of shoes, because we had cattlemen bring us truckloads of shoes from as far away as Glen's Ferry, Idaho. Mm. They'd come through here with a load of cattle going to Portland. They'd drop off a big box like this full of shoes at the shop. We'll be back in 3 days. Can you have them ready? We'll have them, so we fix them up, put shoes, put half soles or whole soles, heels on them.
Whose shoes were they?
Whose cowboy shoes from down around Glen's Ferry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the cattlemen down there bring them in. Mm-hmm. We had fellows bring them in all the time from over in Redmond and Burns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we sold the Nakona boot line in there, and they're real good boots. Cattlemen like them. And because the leather is tanned, so the cow manure won't rot it. And we sold a lot of those over around Redmond and Baker. Yeah, we drew from 3 or 4 counties out in that show. Back at one time, I had a route going from here to halfway and from here to Joseph. After it got so, I left Lawrence's. Well, then I organized these routes up there, and the bread fella running the bread trucks would pick up these shoes at wherever they delivered bread. Why, I'd have him collect shoes for him, put them in a box, and he'd just put them in his cab and bring them down and give them to me. And I'd pay him 4 bits a pair for hauling them down here and back. Mm-hmm. And I'd go up once a month and collect that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was. I was fun. I got acquainted up the branch and down the halfway, like that. But, you know, I was just trying to expand the business and get more in there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had three boys coming along, and they were getting underfoot by that time, and they started to learn how to fix shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So you taught all your boys how to do it?
Oh, yeah. When they were 9 years old, they'd come in the shop, and they would shine shoes, start in with shine. Well, they start in washing the windows.
Mm-hmm.
They got $1 for each window. And if they trimmed it, as they did on the inside and then trimmed it, they got $2. And so Keith's voice went in now. He could always put in the window and people would stop and look. I don't know why, he just had a talent for the windows.
Now by trimming the window, do you mean fixing it?
Yeah, putting merchandise out and putting new merchandise mm-hmm. in and displaying it.
A display.
In a way that people will stop and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
There's an art to it. You see a lot of people go down the street and they never even look at a window. The other people go down the street and they'll see something to catch your eye.
Mm-hmm.
My best eye catcher, I've got an old single action six shooter my grandfather gave me. I put that in there somewhere in a display and that stopped everybody. Had a barrel about this long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's down in the basement, locked up.
So the two of you repaired shoes your partner and
yourself. Mr. Anderson. Mm-hmm. He was. Oh, I don't know what his age was. He had a. I was an explorer, by the way, at the church, and I took a bunch of explorers down to Brigham Young University for exploring a world conference, a church conference on exploring. He was going to be gone a week and have a lot of things explorers exploring. Well, we thought it was exploring into life, you know, teaching them, getting them headed toward a career somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so I took a bunch of boys down. I had a big station wagon there in Buick. And we went down, and the day I got down there, it took us 2 days. We stopped in Salt Lake, and the boys looked all over Salt Lake, had a lot of fun running around. And I just turned to Marie, she said, "Be back here at such and such a time." So they had fun. And then they went on down to Provo and checked in. And I just got checked in and got to my room, and there's a phone call come for me. And Mr. Anderson had a stroke, you know, teleinfo machine, and my wife called me and said, "Get here as quick as you can. I don't know what you're driving me crazy." She said, "I can't run the shop and take care of mother and her dad." So I there was another carload with us in the Grand. And so I just turned all the boys over to them. And my son didn't want to stay. He'd come home with me. And so we drove all night out here the next morning, getting back, and didn't go down anymore. Well, we did. We went down a lot of times for conference. My wife and I, we worked in the church. We worked in the church ever since we all our married life. Mm-hmm. I was an explorer advisor for about 14 years in the Boy Scouts of America.
Can you tell me more about the Boy Scouts?
Boy Scouts? Well, I was on the O&E committee, which is the organization of new troops and getting them chartered and this sort of thing. That was my job as far as the district was concerned. But in my explorer post, we were exploring into manhood, and the objective of it in a church was to get boys started in the direction they wanted to go. And so I took them out to the mail, took them through the mail on Tuesday night. I took them up to the hospital twice a year, went through the hospital, top to bottom. They'd show us the operating room, recovery room, first aid, and everything up there. And, you know, just being surprised what little things I got them into. Out of that bunch of boys, I've got six doctors.
Wow. Now, were the Boy Scouts a part of the church? Or was it separate?
Boy Scouts, the church was one of the first churches that adopted and went with the Boy Scouts of America as sponsors. Now, they sponsored the Mormon Church, was one of the first churches to help Boy Scouts of America charter. And in fact, we have more Boy Scout troops than any other organization now. Mm-hmm. Each ward has a troop seat, and they're always sponsored and take care of all of them. They help the district. In fact, we've got fellow Nelson lives down the street here. He's off at camps this summer 3 or 4 times at these big scout camps around the country.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there. I used to go up to Wallow. There's a big Boy Scouts of America campgrounds up there above the lake. Have you ever been up there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, last time I was up there, there'd been a flood down through there and took everything out.
Oh, no.
But they've rebuilt it, I think, now.
So did you have weekly meetings with the scouts?
Oh, yeah. Lots of times I'd go to Walla Walla. That's the headquarters for the training meetings. And then I'd come back here and go to all the wards and train them.
Mm-hmm.
That was what the Boy Scouts from America do.
Mm-hmm.
They give good training. And if a fellow follows Boy Scouts rules, you can give the boys a lot of advantage in life. In fact, I don't know how many, none of my boys got eagles. But most of the kids that adopt will do their work, will get an eagle, will get their eagle. And this is quite an accomplishment for a boy. I see it. We've got two in our family that have eagles. One that's on a mission in North Carolina. He's an Eagle Scout. And I think Stephen, the one that went to Germany, I think I don't know whether he got his eagle or not, but he was working on it.
Mm-hmm. How did the rest of the community view the Boy Scouts during that time?
Well, at that time, we had the Methodist Church, Presbyterian Church, one of the lodges in the city, some department of the city was sponsoring a Boy Scout. We had about 12, 14 troops in town.
Mm-hmm.
We were active. I don't know how they are now. I said I'll be in scouting as long as my boys are there, but when my boys are out of scouting, I'm gone. And
mm-hmm.
That's the way it was.
So you were doing that about 16 years?
16 years, yeah. Every Tuesday night, every Tuesday, some other training nights.
And where were the meetings, the weekly meetings?
Well, some of them would be at the Mormon Church and the Methodist Church at town. We had a lot of training sessions there. And the Episcopal Church we used to go in there. They all had troops. Good men at the head of them. A lot of good fellows. We worked with a lot of good people in scouting.
Mm-hmm. Was there competition between the
troops,
different troops?
Not only at camps. Usually there was quite a bit of competition.
And that was for fun?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as this troop trying to be better than that troop, well, you all are working for Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
You're Eagle Scout. And that's what everybody in the board and the committee, the scout committee, everything's encouraging every boy to get his eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can go to most of the presidents in the United States have been Eagle Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the leaders have been Eagle Scouts. And it counts a lot on a resume.
Mm-hmm.
Two nephews were Eagles. But they were boys in Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
But
so there was no difference between the troops as far as what church they were affiliated with?
Well, no. They usually went where their parents went. So
mm-hmm.
Their parents would pay their dues and that this. Sometimes the boys could get jobs and pay their own dues. But I remember one time I was having quite a bit of trouble with some of the boys. They was bringing their friends in. That's where the friction comes, because their friends didn't know what discipline was. And anyway, I had some trouble with them one time. I put in a marriage system, and if they lost all their marriage, they got to run the strap line.
What's the strap line?
The fellows with the most points would take their belt off and use it on the others if they went across the room.
Oh!
Belt line, we call it. But I don't know whether you know Ivan Hibbert. He's the boss out here at the mill. He was in my troop, and his little brother was one of the ones that caused him most of the trouble. He's now a doctor. But anyway, I can see where I had some positive influence in the kids. Anyway, you can't have this. That's forcing them to do something. I said, no, it's not. They know the rules. If they obey the rules, they won't be in trouble. But if they step out of line, they're going to get the trouble. he mauled that around. So, I don't know whether he ever approved of it or not, but none of them ever had to run the belt line.
They didn't have to?
No, they straightened up before it got that far.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was fun to see this Well, I'd been a sergeant in the Army for 40 months, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd barked an order at them, they usually shook up. But it was fun.
Now, you've talked about a little bit about your involvement in the church, but that's been a considerable part of your lifetime here in Union County.
Yes. If you're in the Mormon church and raise your family in the Mormon church, you're going to be busy because it's a way of life. Actually, Mormonism is religion, yes, but it's a way of life. As far as I'm concerned, it's God's way of life here on the earth. Keeps you clean. You don't drink and smoke. You don't swear. You don't. You try and live a good, clean life. And you work for other people.
Can you tell me about some of the projects that you're involved in?
Well, just mostly scouting.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been in genealogy work quite a bit. That's tracing families.
Mm-hmm.
And like that, I was on the chairman of the committee for several years. And Melody, you know, Bean Boys, Dave. Anyway, they're both school teachers. They're retired now. To me, I'm thinking 40 years ago because all of them were working in scouting than I was.
Mm-hmm.
But
did you teach Sunday school?
Oh yeah. I taught Sunday school for a while and then I stopped. We have a priesthood class for the men. I taught the 70s when they were in. And that's one of the officers in the priesthood. I taught the high priest quite a bit since I've been older.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a high priest now. And in fact, right now, they let put me out the pasture because I worked with, you know, Wendell Rock, the Orange Service Station up there.
Oh, uh-huh.
He was totally inactive when he came to town. He was a member, and his folks were in here, and they were inactive, and they gave him to me as a home teacher. He'd go and teach them, take a lesson to them every month. Check on, see if they're all right, see what anything the church can do to help them, anything like that. I've been working with him for 15 years.
Yeah.
Finally got him. He now took my place on a high priest group. And he's very good at it. In fact, he came down here yesterday and pulled weeds for me for 3 hours just to help me out because I can't do it. See, I've been sick. And I told him, I didn't know what I was going to do about my garden. Yeah, I'll come down and pull them weeds out. Boy, you should have, well, that trailer out there, he put over half those weeds in it.
Mm.
Yeah, he just worked like a beaver. Yes, he asked me, I don't know how I'm going to pay you back. But, him and his wife both have been active for years, and I just stayed with him. Finally, I got him into activity. Well, one thing, swung the deal. I think with him, his wife got sick, real seriously sick, 6 or 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, and he thought he was going to lose her. And you know, in the church, we can, I don't know what you know about the Mormon church.
Not much.
Well, we believe that if we live clean enough and righteous enough, we can get a recommend to go into the temple and be married to our wife for time and all eternity. And there's not very many divorces after you go through that temple. And so this is what I worked for before I went to the Army. And I was only in the church less than a year, but I was in the temple and married my wife, and I'm so glad that I did, because I made covenants with the Lord that I'd be true to my wife and keep my covenants that I made in the temple. And then when I went into the Army, and you know, the environment there, it just, and I had no trouble at all living my church, living the religion, all the way through the war.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see women. I had that little, you seen that heart, did you?
Mm-hmm.
I packed that around my neck.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I had my wife at home, and that's all I had to have. I didn't didn't have eyes for nothing else. I only went to one dance, and there was a girl that was dancing, and there was, she had three friends with her, and the one I was dancing with, she was a good little dancer. She'd been with other GIs, because she knew how to jitterbug and have fun. But her boyfriend had just left the infantry when I got there, and we went to this dance, and so I took her home that night and walked. There was four of us walked. I think there were two boys and three girls walked out to their apartments and told them good night and come back. That's the only time I even danced with a girl all the time over there. But she was a lot of fun.
Now, has there been opposition to the Mormon Church here in La Grande?
Not for a long while.
Mm-hmm.
Not for a long while. I've never seen any opposition to it. No.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's... only place you find opposition is where people don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Mormon Church works with any church in town. They need them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same way all over the world. In fact, we have a welfare program. And when there's a disaster like those in Africa now, we were some of the first ones to get food to those people.
Mm-hmm.
We fly it out of Salt Lake City. We've got a huge welfare department down there, and stores come in from everywhere. You've seen these two big trailers sitting up here at the church for DI.
Mm-hmm.
Well, stuff goes in there, that goes to Boise, and people there work on it and fix it and sell it, and that makes money. Or else they give us clothes, they fix them, and send them to Salt Lake. They're all clean and pressed, and they send them all over the world to people.
Mm-hmm.
They're good clothes. And this has been going on for 50 years that I know of.
Mm-hmm. How has your involvement in the Mormon Church...
What?
How has your involvement in the Mormon Church affected your lifestyle here in La Grande?
Well, everybody knows that I'm a Mormon. They don't offer me a drink. They don't ask me to go to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I never go to the cigar store unless it's on business. And... Most of the Mormons here are pretty good Mormons. Few of them drink coffee and have a beer now and then, but that's their life, you know. If you want the blessings, keep the commandments. And I'm a shining example of that. Look at me. I'll be 90 next spring in perfect health. And that don't come by accident.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I eat right, I live right, I haven't killed myself with alcohol. At one time, I was smoking 5 packs of cigarettes a day. I quit. And I left Rome on the front in Italy. We were 30 days, and I averaged 3 hours of sleep a night for 30 days. I lived on cigarettes and coffee, one right behind the other, because I had to stay awake. I had 15 men. Two guns and two big guns and two big trucks loaded with supplies, and they had to do certain things every time I stopped. I was with a big, maybe you've seen them, heard of them, it's long tom rifles, artillery pieces. They're 155 long tom. They shoot a shell like that big around, about that long. 180 pound shell, the Trojan. But I was with them from the time we left Rome till we got to Pisa, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And they assigned me the first gun, because I was the best gun section, I guess. But anyway, the colonel put me on that first section, first gun. So when that gun moved, I had to go with it, no matter day and night, middle of the night. So I had to keep my eye on that gun 24 hours a day. Because if it started folding up and that big truck, 10-ton truck of theirs, come back and hooked onto it, my boys had to get my ammunition on my trucks, all their gear. And I had them trained so when I'd blow a whistle 3 times, say march order, everybody dropped whatever they were doing, just and went and got their own personal gear and wrapped it up and tied it up and hung it on a certain post on the truck. And then they had another job. One of them would go for ammunition, one of them get the gun, one of them. Every one of them had everything. One guy's job was to get the toilet, put it on.
Sounds like you ran a pretty tight ship.
You did. But, you know, when you're on the front, you're so close to getting people killed that if every man doesn't do exactly what he's supposed to, when he's supposed to, somebody's going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I never did get such a shock as when we left Rome, the colonel called all the sergeants in. And he said, well, we're going on the front. We'll be on the front for the next 30 days. How far we go, I don't know. He said, but when we get there, I want every one of your men to have every one of your men. He says, these are the rules. I'm giving you this commandment. Right now, I made it a commandment. He says, if any man in your gun section disobeys an order, you shoot him.
Hmm.
And boy, it stuck in my craw. And I told all the fellows that. I said, any time I tell you to do something, do it. Because if you jeopardize this mission or these men, I'll have to shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
And they believed it. I don't know whether I could have or not. Because some of them I'd had for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And they were buddies, you know. Well, they weren't buddies. The sergeant can't have a buddy.